This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and once again, Aaron Norris is my special guest. Aaron, welcome back.
I'm ready. Let's do this.
So I wanted to talk about, in this segment, some of the disruption that's going on. We were speaking at one of the events recently, and a realtor got up there, and you know, you've heard the 80-20 rule, mm-hmm. where you know 80% of the business is done by 20% of the people, and he says he really thought it was headed to 95.5.
It's scary. Now, I don't think some people appreciate what we do at iSurvey Real Estate. Zillow has been on their panel for the last 2 years.
Which is not easy to get, right?
No, that took years to do. Right. And our goal isn't necessarily to debate issues there. It's to get the information live from the source, but then also bat around some issues on stage and have some fun and build those relationships. But what Zillow told us last year was that they're not interested in the realtor community at large. So there's two things they're doing. They're trying to create a soup to nuts platform where you're doing all your paperwork, escrow, everything on a single platform. And they told us that right there that we're only interested in the top 15% of producing realtors, because they're the ones that are willing to pay for it because they're actually doing it. I have this conversation a lot in the marketing realms. Like, I can market for you and drive you leads, but if you can't close the deal, I don't know how to help you. On the other side, we have to figure out how to close better. And that's always the most difficult part.
Right.
So yeah, I think the 95.5 might be a little aggressive, right. But that's been happening for years. I just think technology in the new marketing realm is really making that quite apparent. It's marketing and technology.
Yeah. If you're not learning, you're falling behind, and then there's competitors that are bringing a completely different concept. So let's just talk about Airbnb first of all, because okay. I want to then go from there to Common, mm-hmm. because Airbnb has a model that, how long have they been around?
Oh, geez. It seems like it's almost been a decade. Maybe not. I don't know off the top of my head.
That's interesting. I didn't think it was that long. You know, it's obviously gained momentum. So what is what's the basic concept of Airbnb?
Well, just like any other vacation rental site, they're basically the conduit between an owner of a property and a consumer who either wants to rent a couch, rent a room, or rent an entire place, whether it be a condo in New York City or a beautiful home in Palm Springs.
Well, I mean, that never existed. Maybe it's 10 years ago, but right? I mean, that wasn't available.
What Airbnb different is that they establish trust by connecting everyone through Facebook and ratings.
Ah.
So that's why Uber did so well. You know, it wasn't a random cab driver. You know, it was somebody with a car with a 4.8 rating that just because of those star ratings you could trust.
Okay.
So the community is basically giving you the feedback. They're just the platform. And there's a sense of transparency and trust that's created that really made that special. That's the big difference. So unlike going on Craigslist and like, oh, this guy has a home in Palm Springs I'd like to rent, and you don't know anything, these platforms really created a very important piece of the puzzle, which was the transparency and trust.
So if I'm staying in the guy's home in Palm Springs, I'm not staying somewhere else.
Correct.
And is that group upset?
A little bit, yeah. I've been following the Palm Springs thing right. pretty closely. From what I understand, they used to have a mayor or a city council member who owned a lot of stuff, and I guess he sold to a hotel or something. But hotels are also looking at the Airbnb model. It's a different experience. Like if I have a family or a group of friends I want to go to Hawaii with, maybe I don't want to spend the night in a bunch of separate rooms. It's a different cost model. It's a different inventory altogether.
Hotels are participating in the ownership.
They're looking at it.
That's hilarious.
Everybody is getting into the experience business. Even Airbnb is changing what they do. So they're not just necessarily focused on just the shelter piece of a vacation experience. Over the last year, they've really focused on the experiences at the local spot. What are the things to do? Hosts that will, you know, invite you to dinner or take you to a workout class or take you on the tour of the city. They're they're going the next level as well.
Okay.
Because you've got technology like blockchain right around the corner, or a Bitcoin, but just behind that is just getting rid of the middleman. So it's not going to take too much to get Airbnb out of the mix. Consumers will be able to go through each other. We'll find another way to establish trust. So they're creating something far more robust and holistic to cater to the entire experience of traveling.
Okay. If I'm an owner of a property, why would I choose to do an Airbnb? What's in it for me?
I think Sean O'Toole he's always got little nuggets, and sometimes you don't really realize what he says until 3 years later, and you're exactly. Like, oh, that's what Sean meant.
That's what he meant.
Yeah. He's like, I don't know why you guys keep having us back. You're like, trust me. I think several years ago, he was talking about that it creates a completely different comp. So especially right now in California, a lot of people are looking at that, because on a month-to-month basis, on a long-term rental, the prices are at a point where it doesn't make sense. But perhaps it does if it was a vacation rental and you can rent it out by day, by week. Right. You can get a lot more. Like some of our investors who own properties in the Coachella Valley, they make a year's worth of income in a month.
Because of the right timing of it.
Correct.
Yeah, interesting.
Los Angeles is short of beds. They've been a little bit less hard on vacation rentals because they actually need it for conferences. The last time I was at a conference in the LA Convention Center, I stayed two blocks away. Oddly enough, I think the company that I worked with before you helped with the lighting in the building. But anyway, the parking was free. It was a studio apartment that was absolutely awesome. And it's so funny. These hosts are vying for your top rating. So they leave snacks for you. They personally walk you into the home and show you around. I mean, it's hilarious.
I had to laugh because of the experience I had in Washington, D.C. Remember I called you? Yes. That wasn't an Airbnb. That was a hotel. And I got bit twice by bugs within the first half a minute. Yeah. And that was, by the way, the first experience I had with Uber, because you wanted to get me the heck out of there.
Yeah.
And I had just hung my clothes up and made a call to you. And I probably used the restroom. And then there was a knock on the door, and there was an Uber driver ready to take me somewhere.
Yo, Aaron, I can't stay here. And seriously, I think it was maybe 5 minutes. I went on Expedia, booked a new hotel room. And then I didn't know at the time I could book an Uber for you and tell them even where to go and pay for it. You didn't have to do anything. Yeah.
It was completely eye-opening. And then when I left the hotel, I didn't have the app on my phone yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called a cab.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was there, three people got picked up by Uber drivers, and I was quite,
Well,
now I get it.
I was in New York. This brings Airbnb and Uber. So I didn't know that this Airbnb was illegal. I'm not on top of the laws, and I lived in New York City for 7 years, but I'm not on top of Airbnb laws. Well, I booked it, and then I got the email. I was going there trip with the nieces, and I found like a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom, which is unheard of in New York, condo over by Penn Station. And it happened to be, I didn't know it was illegal, but I got the email. If you get caught, there's going to be a $500 fine.
If you get caught renting it?
Yeah. And that you could get kicked out and be subject to a $500 fine from the city.
But the owner?
I don't know what would have happened to the owner. She was just letting me know that whatever it was she was going to get charged, it would be passed on to me. I don't know. But yeah, it's a problem because a lot of municipalities are freaking out about affordable homes. And they see this as driving up prices or taking inventory off the shelf for people to live. So it is
year-round, I see.
Correct. It's a real problem in major markets.
So it's
A shortage.
A shortage of rentals. That's interesting.
Especially in high-dollar markets. So there are some cities in California that completely banned it. And then you've got states like Arizona that are like, bring it on. They're not scared of it. And it just really depends, I think, on where we're at.
Well, the cities get revenue from hotels, mm-hmm. tax-wise, and they wouldn't from a B&B, I guess.
Correct. And so in Los Angeles, as I understand it, the Airbnb is subject to the hotel tax, and I believe the platform is taking that for you, so you don't have to worry about it. I don't know. It's one of the reasons I've been trying to get Airbnb on iSurvive Real Estate for years, but they're very close to the vest. It's very difficult to even talk to somebody there. So I finally found out who to talk to. But they've said no the last couple of years.
Maybe you should show them the cover of our magazine.
Not sure they would care, but it. I mean, our audience is their audience, and I hope they do come out one of these days. But there's so many other interesting things with like co-living happening, and I've been really fascinated with that. And I think it might be the solution, sort of an in-between for real estate investors in tight markets that need to get more rent for obvious reasons because the prices are high. And it's just, I know somebody in Riverside who's doing it. So the model, if you didn't listen to the radio show the last couple of weeks, co-living is basically, you're renting, it's a per room model. And depending on the level of sophistication, you can do some really cool things. So I was fascinated by our interview with Common because I got to hear a little bit more of some of their strategy. I was really interested to hear that they weren't interested in the amenities war. So living part-time in downtown Los Angeles, the complex I live in has a full-size basketball court, a beautiful gym. They've got food trucks that come every Thursday. They have movie night. It's insane. They're surrounding it, trying to create a community. They're not doing it that way. They don't have a pool in all their buildings. They don't have a gym, but their spaces are absolutely stunning inside. If you go to their website, I want to make sure I give the right website, common.com. Look at some of the spaces they're creating. It's straight out of HGTV. And for a generation that is known for sharing, I think they're calling the generation behind millennials the we generation.
The we generation.
They're growing up in a society. Forget technology. I mean, millennials grew up with technology. We're beyond that. It's, we want a life experience and share. And
they don't have to own anything.
No. And I want to show you, I haven't interviewed these guys yet because I don't think there's a real need for us on the radio show. But if you get a chance and you're on a computer, check out podshare.co. And one of the things, I mean, it's brilliant. For $50 a night in several spots of in LA, you can rent an oversized
bunk bed
with plugs in it for $50 a night. And they market it for, you know, short-term rentals, temporary housing if you're coming into town. It's basically like youth hostels for grown-ups. And I've been in some pretty nice youth hostels like in Europe. I mean, they can be stunning. So I don't even know if this is necessarily nice, but anyway.
Okay.
But I want to read a part of their website. The title of it's called Access, Not Ownership. Welcome to the rise of the freelance economy. The future is access, not ownership. So we are establishing access points across the city to allow members to lay their head, pull up a chair, meet other pedestrians. So pods, get it? Yeah. And charge devices and use the community kitchen, showers, lockers, laundry, and Wi-Fi. Millennials don't own a gym at home. They buy a membership. We don't subscribe to cable television. We watch Netflix. We don't buy CDs. We stream music. American car sales are on the decline because we Lyft or Uber. I think they've captured in just a short paragraph exactly what we're feeling in the real estate industry. Not only has, you know, Gen X been damaged by the downturn, you've got the millennials who, the boomerang generation who can't decide or develop households. They've just started to. But then now we've got a we generation, the next generation coming up, that this is their new reality. They're not so invested in ownership. So it's something that we have to watch. It's not long enough to be a trend,
right?
But this is the technology they're growing up around. And I got to tell you, living in New York City, I went to New York City with a suitcase, starving artist. What a cool experience. I lived in the worst dumps. Like just, I lived in a hallway. I think if your mom knew half the places I lived in, you'd just be so upset. I got some fun articles on the article I wrote for Bigger Pockets, and they're just laughing at the, like, I can't believe you lived in a hallway. I'm like, and the bricks fell on my face that night, like the crumbling mortar would come in. But if you told me that I could have afforded a space, something like this, what's cool about something like a common, it's almost like a membership. If they have a space available in LA, you can transfer from New York to LA. Or if they have a different building in New York and you just absolutely hate your roommate, just be like, hey, the next time one becomes available, I'd like to move. You don't own any furniture. It's fully furnished. You just have your stuff. You just move it to the next space. So you're not locked into, it's a membership instead of a contract.
It's a membership that you can say, sure, I don't want to be a member anymore.
I'm sure there's some kind of, I don't know. We didn't talk about that. If it's a month to month or if there's a minimum stay that you have to do.
Okay.
But it's transferable to other properties that they own.
Correct.
Which I don't know how is possible because they're getting 1,000 applications a month for, and I wasn't sure if they have 450 properties or 450 available spots at the moment, but they're building a lot more. So they're going to grow fast. Fascinating. It's crazy. But anyway,
this is a pretty new concept, right?
Well, I thought it was until I met a local real estate investor through my nonprofit work where she does something very similar to her rentals. So when she first told me about it, I'm just like, you're crazy. She's been owning rentals since she was 18. And she's like, yeah, I rented out per room. So her model in Riverside is a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom downtown. She rents these out for to young professionals, single professionals. She furnishes the main areas, stocks the kitchen with the necessities. I don't know if she furnishes the bedrooms, but it includes internet, monthly cleaning service. So as a landlord, you get visibility on a monthly basis. You make sure that your tenants are taken care and you're cleaning it. So you're hoping that it lasts longer. She tells me that very few people actually use the code, like the main spaces. They're just staying in their bedroom. That's what I did.
Gone, or they're gone.
Yeah. Or they're gone because they're busy professionals. Another trend.
What's the rent difference? I'm sorry.
The rent difference. It's obviously more because you're including everything. One price pays for it all. Internet, cleaning service, utilities, everything in one price. So you have to average it out. And that's going to depend on what utility company you're with and internet costs and all that stuff.
But the owner's doing it because it creates much more revenue for them.
Oh, yeah. The day. And when you have one person move out, you still got the other rooms generating income.
It's like owning a fourplex in a home.
Yeah.
Basically.
The brilliant thing, you spoke by the time this airs, over a week ago at an economic conference that Coldwell Banker puts on, and somebody came up to me, they're like, oh my gosh, I heard your radio show on Common. It was Susie. And she said, I was just like, I think it's the most brilliant thing I've heard to get around some of the things that are going to happen, possibly including rent control.
Yeah.
And possibly including, it's clear that cities, especially major urban areas, are very uncomfortable with the model for tax reasons, but because of housing shortages. At the state level, we're having an affordability issue and just a housing issue. We don't have enough housing.
Right.
Builders have not gone nuts. And so it's becoming an issue. And if it gets mandated down from the state level, it's just not good. So that's why we're talking about changing laws to where they can do rent control, just blanket rent control and everything. We don't want that.
No.
So when I talked to Common in the last shows, they were talking about how it's been received well because it afforded people some opportunities they wouldn't have otherwise had. So somebody's paying $1,600 for rent. Right. And in the San Francisco market.
Yeah, that's unheard of.
You would never be able to replicate that with all the services included in that. Absolutely not.
Okay.
And the properties that they're creating, that's something.
That is pretty cool.
And the difference between a co-living and also Airbnb, I love researching like funny stories of things that have happened in Airbnb.
Cameras or whatever.
No, just destruction as well. People come in and just destroy your place.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, the wear and tear. Some people are there to party for the weekend and it just doesn't hold up as well as maybe something that you're having a little bit more control and a better renter, if you will.
They've had a pretty good percentage of people sign back up too. In the interview you did, it was about 80% of the people signed up. So they must be happy with the experience. That's for sure.
Yeah. So starting to work right now on I Survive Real Estate. They really like being on the radio show, and I don't know sort of the mix. I definitely want to have some technology there, whether it's Open Door. That's another thing. I mean, the realtor, it just seems more and more like they're getting to be cut out. But what I was fascinated with Open Door is that they had a relationship with the national builders with the traded model, very much the CarMax model. Mm-hmm. The biggest rub for a consumer buying a new home is it's contingent on the sale of their property.
Right.
They got rid of that by using Open Door. We'll buy it from you as is, which is great. How on brand, they can fix it because they've got the labor to do it if they want to, or they can just push it out the door.
Right.
But then they get the new homeowner directly into their home. Smart.
It is smart. Andrea Jennings was talking to me yesterday after I spoke.
Oh, I didn't see her.
And she said that she heard of a recent, it's like an Uber agent. Mm-hmm. So somebody wants to see a property,
mm-hmm.
and there's some kind of, I don't even know what I'm about to say. In other words, you can let that be known. You want to see this property,
mm-hmm.
and literally.
Oh, well, they're already using robots. There's robots. I think they're trying this out in the Berkeley area. Now, granted, it's like a robot that has like an iPad attached to it, and the robot can move around and the agent can be live there and walk you through the property. Yeah, it's happening. Technology is coming, and you can push back if you want, or you can figure out how you fit in. You know, we've had to do that for years. My competition is Wall Street, not necessarily other local hard money lenders. What are we willing to do that they won't?
Right.
So I think it's about being human. You know, they're about volume and mass.
Yes.
They don't necessarily care. It's not even their money they're lending out. But we do.
Yeah.
We have, and we're very careful with it. We have the relationships with the people lending. We can be flexible because we know the market. We know the market better than anybody. We can adjust on a dime. I think realtors have to be the same way. They have to find their personal brand of how they fit into the market. So whether that be they're a specialist in type of neighborhood or really connected to the businesses, I don't know. I think we're just struggling to find our space, but the model has changed. That's not, information isn't locked behind a door. Everybody has access to a lot of the same information. That's not the value proposition.
Yeah, that's changed a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
Property Radar, for instance. Now we're going to do a seminar.
Yeah,
coming up with them, and they're gonna you know, show people how to utilize their website so they can understand how to have access to all this information. But that's just an amazing amount of information.
It's a tremendous marketing tool, and I don't think people realize what's changed. I don't even know how we got this information. So I have some investors who only cold call. So they're going after equity sellers and they cold call. Property Radar has people's social media profiles and cell phone numbers in there based on the property. I don't know how he's being able to do that, but it's the coolest thing I've seen. So we use Property Radar every day while we're here. And I just don't think enough investors really know. So one of the things that we're doing when we do the event up in Sacramento is we're going to be showing, sort of based on the strategy that you're doing, how to leverage the platform, because it does so many different things and there is so much data available. It's just knowing what to do with it and how to search it to make sense. But searching by how much equity somebody has in a house, how long they owned it, if it's non-owner occupied, what kind of property. There's so many different fields. I don't even know how many different fields, but it's pretty impressive. But the fact that at the top tier, which I think it's $129 or something like that a month, it's insane how much is available. And your title officer will thank you because they don't ask you to run them a report every couple of weeks.
Well, that's one thing that's gotten just way less expensive. When we were originally in the foreclosure business, that was thousands of dollars of information that you paid for one county a year.
Yeah.
And it was not efficient. It was just a sheet of paper that you got, or, you know, several sheets of paper, and you're always calling and all that. And it got automated and got down to, you know, $39 or $49 a month or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that type of thing it's made all that access cheaper, but it's made the competition explode.
Yeah. Yep. It's one of the conversations. I'm very upfront with people on those roadmap calls. It's just like, it's hard out there. So if you think this is going to be easy, it's not. So one of the reasons I'm having this conversation with you is I don't want you to give up. And the sooner I can get you to a strategy that will work, number one, and then one that you don't mind living with within your personality and income and experience restraints, I think you'll be successful faster.
One of the things that Andrea said was that there was people that flip her properties, and they literally have college kids calling 100 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what their job is.
Just wow.
Talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you just, that's how they get leads.
Yep.
So it's definitely a changed world. Well, we're about out of time. I'm looking forward to teaching in the next weekend, I guess. Not this weekend, but the weekend after that.
In Sacramento, and Property Radar will be doing that one. And then we're going to be building an Airbnb module into the platform, and we'll be taping that live in August when we do Cashing Out on a Boom down in Southern California.
Very cool.
So it's only going to be two times this year, but the great thing, whenever we do that event, it's tied to a year membership to our platform. So you get all 60 hours, and we just want to make it more workshoppy and try new things and learn more.
Aaron, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.